Today I want to talk about being taught to care for others. Instead of being taught to compete, to be better than other people, to do whatever it takes to get ahead, even if that includes disadvantaging other people, wouldn't it be great if we were taught to care for others? In some families, caring for others is kind of seen as the role of the females. Being cared for is seen as the role for males. It seems to me it would have been really easy for all of us to learn caring if we just had a little bit of coaching from a parent. Let's make something, or let's find something, or let's buy something as a gift for, fill in the blank. This will make them happy. Just those kind of words, just that sort of attitude, would be transmitted to a child, and they would recognize that life is a game, and maybe that could be a major aspect of the game. If we just had that little bit of thoughtfulness, and we could have translated it into an understanding that it could actually be fun, and there's value in caring for other people and caring about their feelings. When we don't understand how to balance our self-interest with the self-interest of others, and we don't even know that that's a concept, we need to balance our self-interest with the self-interest of others. If we don't know that, and we only know that if we're taught it, we're missing out on opportunities that would result in friendship, love, cooperation, companionship, and a lot more fun in our relationships. As very young children, we could have had a view of caring, and it would have been expanded. We could have seen that as great opportunity. If we could have watched a mother or a father or somebody else in the family, or actually could have been somebody else's parents, having joy caring for other people, then we might have known there's something other than just being cared for, if we too could be on the giving end of that, would have been a really terrific skill and understanding to have learned. But the trouble is, you know, if you subscribe to this idea, and I do, that the developing ego in a child does not really appreciate that giving is very rewarding. Getting energy is the main goal of a lot of people early in life. Certainly, baby comes out and is born, is looking for mother's milk, has the instinct to suck in order to gain energy, in order to keep its physical body alive and developing. So giving, generally speaking, has not penetrated our awareness. And so, how's that going to happen? Somebody is going to make the effort to teach us, or not. Being taught through demonstration is powerful. I remember reading this some years back, that there was a school that was having a great deal of difficulty with, say, a special group of children. They were taken out of the mainstream of student body and put into a special class because they were so disruptive, so unruly, and didn't play well or get along with other people. And so over time, they were, these kids are really difficulty. They were a great deal of difficult behaviors, very unmanageable. And somebody got the idea, I don't know where that came from, that maybe we could show these kids a video of children their own age playing, cooperating, sharing toys, behaving appropriately in a setting much like the setting that they were in. So what they did is they just sat them down, had them watch that video, and it was astonishing to the teachers that all of a sudden, after watching that video, the kids that had been unruly and chaotic and were fighting over everything, pushing one another around, bullying and being victimized, stopped doing that. And they started sharing, started behaving just like the kids were behaving in the video, respectfully, caringly, cooperatively. It caused people then to think, I'm talking about the staff at the school, to consider the images that these kids would have had in their backgrounds prior to receiving this video. And each one of these children literally came from an unruly, chaotic, perhaps violent, perhaps alcohol or other problems were present in their family of origin. So it was, oh yeah, these kids didn't know how to act kindly because they didn't know what people did. They didn't know what kind people did because they didn't have any kind people to interact with in their homes. So with this lack of awareness of this language, I'll call it kindness, it's like, I don't speak that language. Well, instead of punishing or demonizing a child for that, we were like, yeah, they didn't get that language training, getting along with others. Makes me think, and I know there are a lot of parents out there who are concerned about this idea, if you think of that video and then you consider what the average child is being exposed to on television today, the amount of violence, the amount of abuse, the amount of disrespect toward women, you'd go, oh, wow, you think there's any kind of relationship between the violence that goes on outside the TV, in homes, on the streets, is so high because the kids are getting trained in this with visual images of abuse? So violence is so high, but respect for other people, very low. You go, thank you, media, thank you, movies, TV, books. From our earliest days in school, and I happen to be in my hometown this weekend, boys are taught to compete. Not how to make situations better, but how to be better than other people, than other boys. That competition goes on in a playground, on the sports fields, in the classroom. It is about not necessarily learning, it's about getting a better grade than everybody else, getting 100. So this scramble to the top, climbing to the top, is exactly what adults do all day long in so many different areas of human activity in this country. If you've been around little boys for any period of time, like about a minute, you would go, whoa, yeah, the electric nature of boys is so obvious from the earliest days of their lives. They don't sit still necessarily in school. They fidget, they look out the windows, they're bouncing up and down in their seats, they're seeking an outlet for their electric energies. But boys get made wrong for that. A lot of teachers or a lot of parents or a lot of educators think that, you know, this is a great opportunity to give Ritalin to a kid. Ritalin, this would help that kid sit still. And you can imagine that the Ritalin is about what's best for the teacher, what's convenient for the teacher. It's like, oh, yeah, I just want lumps of clay sitting in these seats that I can pump information into. Maybe they can memorize, it, depending on the effect of the medication. And at the end of X number of years, I can turn them loose. Now, clearly, the people that have a calling toward education at a young age don't think like this. They really are looking to grow these kids spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. But other people are going, like, you know, school is a warehouse, and all I have to do is survive an X number of years, and then I can retire. These kids just bouncing around in the seats, young boys, sometimes we make arrangements for them to go out on a playground field and burn off some energy, run around, go crazy, do all kinds of physical activities, burn off that energy, then come back and sit still as a cigar store Indian statue for the rest of the day. But all that running around that took place on the playground field or on the sports field maybe could have had combined with it images or the value of caring for others. But that is largely ignored. If we think of the four driving needs that Christ talks about in the book Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth, having a natural dominance in an undeveloped, ego-driven people. That is, you know, hey, you know, this is, I got to do this. I got to defend myself from criticism. I've got to defend myself from any kind of emotional or physical attack. I got to be first in the race of life. I want to get all things good for myself, and then I want to push away opposition that might try to take what I've acquired. That's happening. That's a natural human ego. So if that happens before school begins, and we get, hopefully, educated to understand there are other points of view that we could have, that education occurs at home, in school, in religious institutions, if it included ways to redirect some of these energies that we've got going for us, if we could think in terms of, let me see if I can identify and balance somebody else's self-interest with my own. If I can become aware of the needs of other people, I'm going to understand a lot more about human nature than I would if all I think of is myself. If I'm the only person in the universe, my ability to get along with other people is going to be severely compromised. We can be guided. We could be taught that. We could be shown that. How to look and identify what other people are feeling and experiencing. The expansion of our awareness so that we could perceive that, perceive the needs of other people, just as a concept would be valuable. And that would strengthen the structure of our society, similar to, say, the improved communication between cells in our body would make our body structure healthier. It's like, oh yeah, if one cell can communicate and cooperate with another cell, oh yeah, that I can see how that could work if we multiplied that by 10 trillion. Yeah. And we've got 6.5 billion people on this planet, most of whom are either resigned to being trampled by others, or the other great majority are busy trying to trample others, climbing to that proverbial top. And then there's an opportunity for others of us to go, wait a minute. Maybe I can help other people in their climb. Maybe I can serve other people by caring for them and supporting their efforts to develop spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. It is natural for us to think only of ourselves when we start physical life. And I'm thinking that if we were fortunate, we learned to think positively about the members of our family and recognize that they too had needs. And if we were extremely fortunate, we would have recognized that same importance in all of our relationships. It's like, oh, yeah. Everything, the puppy, the kitten, the birds, the swans that I just made reference to, or I'm about to make reference to, is going to show up for us if we look around for those kind of opportunities. A lot of people say, I want to start my own business. But if you think about it, successful businesses are really based upon a simple idea. I need to find a need that's out there, and I've got to find a way to satisfy it. Perhaps better than a way that's currently in use, or maybe there's no need. No need is being satisfied right now. And, you know, I can bring this idea to market. People will find it more convenient, more comfortable, because it adds value to their lives. You know, if you turn around and say, wow, how about the person who is saying, I'm going to start a business, but I'm not going to take into consideration any of the needs of the people I want to sell stuff to. You go, you're not going to take into consideration how customers might feel or what they want or the price they're willing to pay or, no. I just want to do it this way. It's like, okay, good luck. What are you going to do for your second business? Because that one is guaranteed to fail. I happen to be married to a wonderful woman who notices other people's needs. Sometimes it seems to me before the other people know they have needs at all. Mary Ann grew up in our hometown working for her parents in their 300-seat restaurant. She worked as a bus girl, she worked as a waitress, even throughout college and then afterward. And she calls her ability to anticipate the needs of other people restaurant eyes and ears. Restaurant eyes and ears. I heard her talking about this in a consulting environment once to people. She was teaching Fortune 500, or actually I think at that point it was Fortune 100 top salespeople. This is a concept. If they could anticipate the needs of other people, they would be so much further ahead than other salespeople. They would be so respected, so appreciated. And so Marianne used this restaurant eyes and ears as a concept, as a talent, as a skill that she developed over those early years of her life in her career at IBM. And it even serves her, well, it certainly serves Nikki and me on a daily basis. And I recognize our children and grandchildren and our friends. A lot of people are benefiting from Marianne's restaurant eyes and ears. And as a result of seeing this behavior, I'm being taught by her modeling, right? She's doing it, and I'm seeing how it's done. I'm seeing there's enough time, there's enough energy, there's enough resources, there's enough money, there's enough whatever to care for others. My children are benefiting tremendously, not just as recipients, but now seeing somebody in action, this level of generosity with energy and other things, it's like, this is possible. You could do this. You can care for other people. It just takes an orientation to think about somebody else and then just ourselves. You say, if you said that to somebody, you might want to develop the skill of thinking about somebody other than just yourself. Now, that might make a person defensive, but when I think of it, I should think of somebody other than just myself. It's like, wow, Tom, that doesn't sound like that would be too difficult. What? That should be pretty easy. Look around. But for those of us who grew up without the nurturing or the caring that we felt we needed when we were little children, I think it's kind of easy to remain in that anxious kind of, I've got to satisfy my needs. And so everything becomes about I and my needs. About 3 years ago, one day, I was talking to three separate clients who were in the caring business. One was a dentist, one was a chiropractor, and I don't recall the third, but something similar. And I said, tell me what makes you happiest in your work. When are you the happiest at work? And without any hesitation, each one of them essentially said the same thing to me. What makes me happiest is working with clients and making them happy, improving their lives, improving their physical condition, improving their smile, making them feel better about themselves. That's, and their lives, that's what makes me happiest at work. I said, me too. I agreed with each one of them. Caring for others is rewarding. It's spiritually rewarding since we do reap what we sow. So it's like, oh, yeah. But beyond that, that's waiting for the harvest. If we just have to wait till the harvest till we can enjoy something, that's like getting to the destination before we can enjoy a journey. That doesn't work. We won't go on very many journeys. If we can enjoy the journey while we're on the journey, and the destination is just a stopping point that's temporary before we embark on another journey, that's a whole different story. And you can get emotional rewards out of caring for somebody else because it feels good to be effective. If you're effective at making somebody else happy, you don't have to wait very long before you can see the results of it. You can see it in their body, their demeanor, their face, their verbal expressions. You can see that. It's like, yeah. So to be able to see somebody with increased happiness indicates that we have figured out a way to improve a situation. Now, on a physical level, it's rewarding because we've got this energy. If we see a demand, subconsciously or ideally consciously, and then react to fill it or satisfy it, that specific response to a demand, a need that somebody else has, is powerful. And when we respond to it and produce a desirable result, to me, that's a definition of being successful. I just mentioned swans. I was thinking of this a few minutes ago before this call began, because I'm sitting on a boat and I watched three swans swim by. Two adults and a baby. They were in single file, right? And the baby was in between. So I had an adult. Right behind was the baby. Right behind was the other adult. Swans mate for life. So I'm guessing one adult was the father of that baby. One was the mother of that baby. And, of course, the third was the baby. And I just watched and I made up this meaning for their movement in the water. The one in the front, which I would guess is the father, the male, is for protection. Leadership, protection. That person in front is, the swan in front, is the one that's out front, leading the way and keeping their eyes open for possible threats. Now, swans in New York State are protected animals, and it's very rare if something bad happens to them. Although some years ago, some kid shot an arrow and hit a swan. That really was an upsetting experience for a lot of people, including that kid and the fine and the, I think maybe the jail term that he got. So the baby's in between, and he's seeing how the father swims. And right behind, I'll say, was the mother, who is protecting the rear. So nothing could attack physically from behind. And you go, wow. Those swans were demonstrating, perfect for today, a demonstration of caring for another. Swans do this instinctively. They care for one another. They will care for their mate, and they clearly will care for their offspring. Human mothers do this too, instinctively. It comes with the territory. All of us can have that most important instinct, because even men have mother energy in them. Most of us have had mothers as mothers. And, and if that could have been modeled for us, if it could have been taught, if it could have been reinforced, if it could have been honored, our relationships in the family and outside the family could have been completely different. Instead of the, what I'll call the American myth of the self-made man, when you start looking at this rugged individualism and the people who have been described that way, you go, they had a lot of help. They had a government contract. They had a privileged relationship. So that's really a myth pretty much all the time. And so instead of reinforcing that rugged individualist, I'm all by myself climbing the mountain, that's not happening. Nobody is climbing Mount Everest by themselves. Even the first white man to do that did it because a Sherpa made him able to do it. Instead of all of that nonsense emphasis, we would be so much better off as a people, as a country, as a planet, if we praised people who cared for others, and if we praised and rewarded people who taught other people to care for others. Whether we've been taught that or not when we were growing up, we certainly can do something about it now. Even though we may have examples where people clearly did not care for us, were not respectful, did not honor our being, did all kinds of stuff, maybe even including abuse, we can do something about it right now. Because people are watching us. People are using us as role models. Little children see adults behave, and they're going to behave the way, according to what they see. We can be the video that demonstrates a respectful, honoring, caring attitude toward other beings, to include pets or other people. Somebody else is watching. Somebody else is learning. So we are, in fact, teaching other people how to care for others. And I think, really, societally, relationship-wise, there are very few things that are more important than that. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8, Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. How about if we could become aware of the presence of the divine within other beings, other people, other living things? We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.